Chapter 4. Consignment. The present Sunday morning.
You coming or what?
Snapped Dan, holding the front door open.
Yes, chill out already, replied Lucy, grabbing her keys off the sideboard.
I don't want to get stuck with the lousy jobs, he grumbled. The good ones will go quick.
You're assuming we'll get to choose what we're assigned, replied Lucy, closing the door behind them.
In the car home yesterday, KGO810 had featured a state-sponsored infomercial. Volunteer to get services back online and earn extra rations. Report to City Hall from Sunday onward. Given that she and Dan had failed to procure a gun, securing extra rations seemed a sensible second option. Car travel strongly discouraged while signals are down. All city buses now free of charge. They exited the gloomy lobby of their building.
Look, said Lucy, pointing to a house on the opposite side of the street. A large poster had been crudely slapped over the brick wall.
Curfew now in effect. Dusk to dawn. Siren will sound. Remain indoors. Lethal force will be used. At the foot of the poster were two smaller details. By order of the governor of the state of California, removing this poster is a criminal offense.
That would explain it, said Dan as a military patrol rumbled past slowly.
The soldiers glanced at the two of them with indifference as the jeep rolled over a set of disused tram lines. The heavy weaponry and uniforms were at odds with the clear blue skies above. Yesterday's cacophony of horns had been reduced to an occasional beep this morning, as drivers weaved more cautiously, the volume of cars more than halved. Lucy continued with Dan toward the bus stop, where they found a dozen people already standing in line.
Bus is gonna be busy, grumbled Dan.
Busy wasn't the right word. When the bus arrived, it was fit to burst. The driver didn't even come to a halt. She just drove past them, raising an apologetic hand.
Come on, said Lucy, giving Dan a nudge as she set off.
We can walk it. I think all the buses are gonna be like that. It's only a mile and a half to City Hall. No point going back for the car. We don't want to waste any more fuel.
Check out the school, said Dan as they passed the local elementary.
Lucy surveyed the large truck parked outside. A pair of soldiers stood guarding the vehicle while two civilians hastily unloaded it.
Must be the kids' rations, she concluded. The radio said they'd be prioritizing the schools.
Grunted Dan. Good time to be a kid.
His strong arm swung as they walked. Breakfast had been modest, to say the least, and Lucy was getting the impression that just 24 hours in, her partner was finding the adjustment to rationing harder than expected. He was used to a muscle-building diet, and their new calorie budget was half that. City Hall was worse than the buses. It was like a Major League Baseball game with tens of thousands of people converging upon a single venue. Only City Hall was never designed to be a stadium. Long, snaking cordons had been set up to deal with the excess crowds, and there was a heavy police presence.
I'll be honest, conceded Lucy, I didn't expect this many people to show up.
By the looks of it, replied Dan, neither did the authorities.
It was 2 hours before the pair even made it inside the building.
Thank you for your patience. Remain calm and you will be processed as soon as possible, repeated a police announcer for the 100th time.
Each sprawling line continued to grow faster than the rate of processing. To Lucy's bitter disappointment, their entry into the hall only led to a further set of swollen lines, each edging forwards at a snail's pace. After a further hour of standing in the increasingly humid processing chamber, a large woman fainted and had to be helped to the side to recover. After that, people began to sit on the floor and shuffle forward only when they had to. Every now and then, the sound of a baby crying would cut across the hubbub of the hall, setting off another infant, leaving the two wailing aimlessly while stressed parents tried desperately to placate them in the face of judgmental onlookers. Finally, Lucy and Dan's turn came. The police officer controlling the front of the line signaled for Lucy to come forwards, which she did, but Dan was stopped short.
One at a time only, snapped the officer.
Dan shrugged and retreated. Lucy continued towards the vacant kiosk alone.
Name? Asked the desk clerk, barely looking up.
Lucy Young?
I need people in the following areas: power, medical, logistics, fire safety, and sanitation. Any preference?
Can you be more specific?
No? Lucy blushed. I'd really like to stay with my partner. Can I ask him where he's going to choose? Again, the clerk barely looked up, giving a curt nod. Lucy hastened over to Dan. Power, medical, or logistics. Those are our choices, pretty much, she added, filtering out the last two. Logistics sounds the least dangerous, replied Dan decisively. Okay, make sure you choose the same, insisted Lucy. She hurried back to the kiosk and stated her preference. The clerk wrote down some follow-up information, then tore off a slip and slid it across the desk to her. Take the exit on the right. Show them this and they'll tell you which bus bay to go to. You'll need to display it again when you get to work, so don't lose it. Next, please. Lucy took the slip and moved towards the exit. She bent down and tied her laces, stalling for time until Dan had been processed and caught up. As they approached the exit together, a policeman barred their path. Ticket, he demanded, extending a hand. You're this way, ma'am. Sir, you're coach 17, stated the officer, returning their papers. What? Wait, we're supposed to be together, protested Lucy, holding up both tickets side by side. Sorry, ma'am, you've been assigned L4 and your partner's been assigned to L9. Then that needs to be changed. No transfers until the backlog's been cleared, ma'am. Sorry. You should be able to apply in a couple of days, though. Are you freaking kidding me? She protested, prompting Dan to intervene. Sorry, officer, my partner's just tired, is all. Is there really nothing you can do? Sure, I can have you both locked up for the night. Or you can get the hell on with it like everybody else in this city and quit whining. Lucy glared at the officer while Dan led her to the side. It's only for a couple of days, he said, looking her straight in the eye. We'll be fine. It won't be like yesterday. The National Guard's on the streets now. She nodded, acutely aware of the people starting to bunch behind them. Hey, barked the officer. We're going, replied Dan, hastily turning back to Lucy. See you at home. Be careful. They parted quickly and unsatisfactorily without embrace or comfort. Lucy paced to coach L4 where the driver beckoned her to hurry aboard. She looked at the strangers lining each row, recognizing her own anxiety in a few of them. Grabbing the last empty seat, she craned to see out of the window. Dan was already gone. She took a steadying breath. Time to focus on the task ahead, whatever it may be. Bottles, said Lucy. Refilling them. You? She asked, stepping through the door. Inventory, replied Dan, coming through from the kitchen to greet her properly. You got inventory? She scoffed incredulously. That's your kind of OCD heaven. Guess I lucked out. Lucky L9. Managed to pocket any Tootsie Rolls for us? She jested. Well, they caught someone doing that, actually. Stealing from the inventory. They beat him up pretty good. So I got us nothing. On the upside, none of my ribs are broken, so yay for that. How was Bottles?
Best day ever. Oh, wait, no. No, it was terrible, because I was in a recycling factory.
Just when I thought you couldn't get any sexier.
You're right, it's pretty glamorous, actually. I think I finally found my calling in life, said Lucy with a swish of her hair. They want all the plastic bottles we can find to be cleaned for recirculation. It's a mess, though. Most don't have lids, and loads are split. I guess it's all part of the water rationing, but I really can't see how it's worth it.
There was a flyer about it, said Dan, searching around. It sort of makes sense, the way they explained it.
Kinda, except that handing out and collecting bottles is super inefficient. Why not go around with a water truck and let people fill them up that way? Countered Lucy, eyebrow raised.
Only angle I can think of is hygiene, mused Dan. If people can't flush their lavatories and water's rationed, then they're probably not washing their hands too often. Seems an easy way for people to get sick. Trust me, cholera's a much bigger problem than having you guys hunt around for bottles. I think I saw one of your water trucks on the route back, actually. It was stopped outside a retirement home.
Lucy inspected herself in the hallway mirror. God, I look like shit, she said, lifting her messy, matted hair up and prodding the bags under her eyes.
And I'm absolutely beat, she yawned, sitting down among the shoes in the hallway and pulling off her current pair. I'd forgotten what it's like to stand up all day.
Luckily for you, we've got a gourmet dinner lined up, winked Dan. Half a tin of tuna each, plus a nice piece of bread.
Truly, you spoil me, she snorted, extending a hand for him to help her back up.
Nothing but the finest for my girl. Don't worry, we've got some relish left in the cupboard. And there's butter, too.
The harsh, tinny sound of a voice amplified through a bullhorn echoed up from the streets outside.
Curfew is about to start. Return to your homes immediately.
The announcement repeated on a loop. Lucy wandered over to the glass balcony door and peered down as the patrol car passed by their street.
Wow, they're not taking any chances on that one, she said, sitting back down and rubbing her feet again.
Did you hear about the fire? Asked Dan.
The fire?
Huge fire over on Southside, Hillsborough way. You didn't hear the sirens last night? The whole thing was nasty. Apparently 6 people died. Someone had to drive to the fire station just to tell them their street was burning down. By the time the fire crew got there, it had spread to a whole bunch of other houses.
Jesus, how come a patrol didn't spot it?
No idea. Makes you wonder, though, how good their patrols can be if they can't spot a street on fire at nighttime.
Is this the flyer? Asked Lucy, picking up a simple, two-sided, black-and-white leaflet from the table.
Yeah, it was in front of our door when I got back. There was one in the mailbox, too, actually. Pretty thorough.
Lucy scanned through the flyer. The design was extremely basic, pure information, no frills. Civilian Guidelines, read the title, under which were short lists of subtitles in smaller texts. Curfew, rations, schools, buses, employment, safety. She examined further. Curfew in effect dusk till dawn. Siren will sound daily at beginning and end of curfew. Stay inside. Army patrols will use lethal force. Rations will be distributed to your home weekly on given day between 6 and 7 p.m. South side on Wednesdays, north side on Thursdays. All citizens wishing to receive rations must be present in person. No exceptions. Stand outside your home and do not move. Truck will come to you. Report to hospital if unable to self-present for rations. You must make your rations last 7 days. Bottled water will be distributed every 2 to 3 days by patrolling trucks. Listen for announcements. Water bottles are loans and must be returned. New water will not be given out unless empty bottle is returned at the truck. Maximum distribution per person, 1/2 gallon. Schools remain open. Children will be given lunch rations at school daily. Free daytime buses will run across the city. Volunteers needed to help restore utilities. Report to City Hall for assignment. You will be paid extra rations, age 16 and up only. Conserve water. Take extreme care with candles and naked flames. Keep bucket of water in your home to tackle non-oil, non-electrical fires. In event of fire, try to extinguish flame, then evacuate all people from building and flag down a patrol for help. At the bottom of the flyer was an asterisk with a smaller text. North side defined as all homes north of Rivera Street, West Side, and 26th Street, East Side. Curfew in effect? Extra rations? Naked flames? It's like a music festival featuring the worst band names ever, muttered Lucy. She reread the flyer, processing the information while chewing slowly, trying to stretch out the modest meal. She glanced across the table at Dan, who was doing the same, interspersing every mouthful with a small sip of water followed by a pause.
I think they made a mistake with those flyers, he offered after another slow sip.
How so? Inquired Lucy, frowning as she turned the leaflet over in her hand, examining it more closely.
The school rations. They shouldn't have mentioned them. Or maybe they shouldn't have done them at all, he continued, taking another microbite of tuna bread.
Lucy gave him a baffled look.
There was a police car outside the school earlier, said Dan. Saw it on the bus home.
So?
I think it's to do with the rations.
That's a bit of a leap, countered Lucy. It could have been there for loads of reasons. Hell, if it was the high school, then it was probably one of the kids.
Dan shook his head as he processed another bite.
It was a middle school, and I think someone read the leaflet or listened to the radio and thought,
schools are getting a bucket load of free food? Every day? I'll have me some of that.
You're saying someone robbed the school? Scowled Lucy.
Food's the new currency, right? The government's paying us in it, so it must be. And according to this leaflet, schools receive large daily deposits. They're basically unguarded banks now. This leaflet's just told every cynical person out there exactly where to go if they want a load of free food.
You think people would actually do that? Steal from children? That's gotta be a minority of a minority, surely. pondered Lucy, unconvinced. A few hundred kid lunches are still at least 100 adult lunches. I think from some perspectives, it'd be stupid not to. There'll be a lot of people who won't know how to make a week's rations last. And when they run out of food by day 4, who's going to offer them more?
Lucy considered this. Ah, but you said money's pointless now. So even if a gang has lifted a load of kids' lunches, how are they going to sell them if people have nothing to pay with?
I don't know. They'll pay with stuff, I guess.
And if they don't have anything worth trading?
Welcome to the world of gang debt. You can't physically pay them, so they get you to do a favor for them instead. Something pretty vanilla at first. But then, say they deliberately overpay you in rations. You're greedy or desperate, so you accept, not realizing you're immediately in debt to them again. And the next favor they get you to do is a little less savory. And so on, until you're basically a hitman.
Well, that's depressing.
Yep,
agreed Dan, taking another sip. Thanks for the cheery dinner chat, babe. I'll think twice next time I borrow anything from you.
They can fix it, declared Dan, setting his glass down. You just keep the soldiers there while the kids eat. It'd slow delivery down, so I guess some kids would be eating at 10 and others at, like, 3, but at least they wouldn't get robbed.
A loud siren sounded from outside, a protracted electronic whine lasting about 4 seconds. There was a pause of 4 more seconds, then a second blast followed by another pause, then the final siren.
Holy crap, that was loud, exclaimed Lucy, removing her fingers from her ears.
That's got to be the curfew alarm, right? 3 seems excessive, surely.
Loud and clear is what it was, replied Dan. If you're going to use lethal force, you've got to give proper warning. And that was pretty unmistakable.
He took her empty plate and stacked it under his. We should go to sleep soon, said Lucy, watching her partner wipe the plates clean at a snail's pace. You're tired, I can see it.
I'm tired too, and we're eating less. We need to compensate by sleeping more.
Sounds sensible, he sighed.
Besides, added Lucy, her jaw creaking open into a yawn,
I want to be on my peak game for the bottle factory tomorrow.
Lucy lumbered sleepily into the bathroom, feeling her way in the darkness, guided by the smell of bleach working hard. Once done, she made her way back towards the bedroom, only to pause mid-step, her ears pricked by the sound of an engine running outside and a car door slamming. She wandered over to the balcony and slid the door open as quietly as she could, stepping out onto the cold tiles. The moon was hidden behind a cloud. Squinting at the dark streets below, she could make out a military truck at the bottom of the road. Its engine idled while the twin beams of its headlights illuminated the ground ahead. At the edge of the light, figures moved in the darkness, weaving between rows of parked cars, occasionally ferrying something towards the truck before scurrying back into the shadows. Lucy watched for another minute, the bright headlights hampering her ability to focus on the dark peripheral figures. The secretive work continued until the last package was loaded. The last figure climbed back into the truck and it rumbled off up the street, soon disappearing into the next block. Lucy slid the balcony door shut again and returned to bed, rubbing the goosebumps on her arms, quietly slipping into a claustrophobic dream.
Assholes!
Exclaimed a neighbor from the street below, slamming his car door closed and kicking his vehicle in anger.
Fucking pirates, the lot of you!
The man yelled, swearing at a passing patrol car before storming back into his home.
Shit, so that's what they were doing, said Lucy, staring down at the irate man. Are you seeing this?
She turned to look at Dan, who was engrossed in yet another ration count. He came over to the window and peered down. More people were appearing on the streets, checking their cars, trying the engines, examining the fuel caps, and cursing loudly.
None of the cars are working, he muttered, catching up with the situation.
I saw it happening last night. I thought it might have just been a dream, said Lucy. There was an army truck on our street for a while. Then it went around the corner. It was really dark. I couldn't see much, but I'm guessing the next block's fuel's gone, too. She stared out at the commotion below. The people were stranded, powerless, and it made immediate sense. Cars were part of the city's bloodstream. The circulation of people kept the city alive, but that circulation depended on fuel, a fast, dwindling resource. So to keep its patients safe, the military would have to keep its heart rate slow and regular.
Hmm, muttered Lucy, nodding to herself as she pieced it together.
It's a control thing, surely, said Dan, rudely missing her entire internal monologue. We're on track, by the way, he said, tossing a notepad and pen back onto the table next to their food stock.
The thing I don't get, quizzed Lucy, is how they knew which type of fuel they were extracting from each vehicle. Because they all run off different gas, right? You think they've just mixed them all up? And how come our car alarm didn't go off?
The police definitely have ways to bypass car alarms, that's easy, reasoned Dan. Dunno about the fuel, though. Maybe it was most efficient to collect it all, then find some place to distill it apart again later.
He looked at Lucy properly, and his expression softened to one of concern.
You look pale.
Gee, thanks.
No, I mean, here. He passed her a vitamin bottle. Iron supplement.
She took it gratefully and swallowed a tablet before walking over to the calendar on the wall. Picking up a Sharpie, she drew a large circle around the date.
Happy day 2 of martial law, sweetheart, she said, as the pen squeaked across the vertical paper. Ready for work?
As they walked towards the bus stop for work, the chanting became louder.
That doesn't sound too good, cautioned Dan as they approached the main road.
Hundreds of people marched by, blowing whistles and chanting. A few had drums and air horns to add to the cacophony.
Where's our gas? Where's our gas? Rang the chant over and over as the people walked in the direction of City Hall.
A police patrol car slowly escorted the marchers, supported by 3 army jeeps at further intervals along the crowd. The soldiers eyed the protesters warily for signs that the atmosphere might turn.
Free movement is a right! Free movement is a right! Came a second chant, briefly overtaking the first.
Are they insane? Gawped Lucy, watching as people shouted and marched as if they weren't surrounded by soldiers with machine guns.
I'm not sure they fully grasped the implications of martial law on their rights, replied Dan. People don't know what's good for them. It's precisely the reason they took our fuel away. These people can't see the bigger picture.
Lucy examined the people walking, looking for the usual protest markers. T-shirts with the anarchy symbol, balaclavas, caricature masks of politicians. But these people looked exceptionally ordinary.
I think this is about as grassroots as marches get, she said, as they stood at the periphery.
It looks pretty safe, she added, looking at the number of children in the crowd following alongside their parents.
Yup, and it could turn on a pinhead, said Dan, risk-averse as ever.
Come on, let's find an alternate route. I can't see any buses coming this way soon.
When they met back at home that evening, it was 5:45, nearly time for the north side of the city to receive its rations. Lucy and Dan took their place outside their building. The street was lined with people anxiously awaiting food. Some made small talk, presumably those fortunate enough to have had well-stocked cupboards when the satellites failed. Others just stared blankly ahead, hunger sapping the conversation from them. As she and Dan were new to the area, they didn't recognize many of their neighbors, but Lucy spotted Manuela standing a few yards ahead, alone. Her shoulders were slumped. Lucy felt a pang, an urge to go over to the woman, but something stopped her.
Everyone looks so anxious, whispered Lucy, putting Manuela to the back of her mind and trying to discreetly study the people on the opposite sidewalk.
I don't blame them. You hear the rumors? Replied Dan, leaning in.
I heard one at work, said Lucy, still observing the strangers ahead. Folks were saying Northside's drop's been canceled because they ran out of food doing Southside yesterday, but I figured they were just talking trash, right?
I heard that too, said Dan, also scanning the crowd. I'm pretty sure it's bull, but I also heard there was some commotion down at City Hall this morning.
From the gas protest?
He nodded. Apparently things took a turn when the protesters reached City Hall. Some of them started demanding to see the mayor, then one person pulled a gun and that was that. Police took him out. Crowd panicked. Then there are like 8 different versions of what happened next.
Tell me the version you believe. Flashing lights signaled the arrival of the ration convoy, cutting Dan off before he could reply. Leading the way was a police patrol car, followed by an armored vehicle, the supply truck, and a second armored vehicle. From the cop's megaphone came a somber warning.
Move from your doorstep and you will be shot.
Stay still, we will come to you. People did not move from their doorsteps. Efficient as the soldiers were, it felt like an age before they reached Lucy and Dan's building. Each recipient was stamped with an indelible date mark on their hand, giving them the air of inmates rather than civilians. Lucy's throat felt dry as she watched the preceding addresses take their parcels and disappear. Were there really going to be enough? The truck rumbled forward to their building and stopped, the driver crunching on the handbrake but leaving the engine idling. The vehicle trembled, mirroring the unfed occupants of the street. Lucy eyed the mounted gun turrets fearfully. She had never seen a machine gun up close before. Their abundance in movies and on TV was no preparation for actually looking down the barrel of one. The soldier manning the nearby turret scanned the crowd. Lucy wondered if he'd had to use it yet. Being from the National Guard, he was probably local to the Bay Area. There was a chance he'd have to train it on people he knew. People he'd grown up with, even. Could he go through with it, if it came to that?
Hand! Barked a soldier who was suddenly standing in front of Lucy with alarming proximity.
She stuttered, as he grabbed her wrist and stamped it firmly, leaving a thin, inky sheen on her skin. The man moved on to Dan while a second soldier shoved a clear, thick plastic bag full of rations into Lucy's torso, which she narrowly avoided dropping. The package was smaller than she'd expected. Her mind darted back to their table of rations in the apartment, and she felt her cheeks burn. What if other people knew? A group nearby were already discussing the size of the bags in less than positive terms. Dan had been right. If anyone found out about their stockpile, it would become a magnet as rations ran out. They had to keep their heads down. The second armored vehicle pulled level with them, its endless reams of ammunition poised to tear through row after row of delicate human tissue at the click of a button. A face on the other side of the street caught Lucy's eye, then vanished from view, obscured by the truck. Lucy gasped, craning her neck to try to see past the slow-moving vehicle. "What is it?" said Dan, putting an arm around her shoulder. The Humvee moved forwards, revealing the far sidewalk again.
"No, I..."
Lucy stared across the street at the groups of people retreating into their homes, searching for that familiar face. It had gone.
"Lucy?"
pressed Dan.
I thought I saw Cassie, is all," she confessed. "But it must have been someone else."
"It's dark, easy to confuse faces. Cassie'll be fine, Luce," consoled Dan. "She will have received her rations yesterday. I'm sure she's equally worried about you, and she needn't be." Lucy nodded, her brow wrought with concern. "I don't know what the deal is with days off on our new jobs," he added, "but when we get one, we'll go check up on her, okay?"
Lucy squeezed his hand in appreciation, and they joined the whispering march of their fellow residents back into the building. As they climbed the stairwell, illuminated by an assortment of handheld flashlights, everyone fell into a slow, synchronized step, until the crowd gradually thinned out floor by floor, with people quietly slipping into their abodes, away from further scrutiny.